We're in lesson number 17 in the book of 1 Samuel. Open your Bibles to chapter 11. We're at verse number 4. Now, remember where we were. Where we were was the men of Jabesh-Gilead had been approached by Nahash the Ammonite, and they had made a covenant, or started to make a covenant, try to agree to a covenant, that the Jabesh-Gileads would agree to allow the Ammonites to rule and control over them. I remember Jabesh people, the Jabesh-Gilead, that was the capital of the area of Gilead. And so they agreed that they would go into the covenant with the Ammonites, with Nahash the Ammonites, and Nahash came back with this ungodly atrocity to be part of the covenant of the agreement. That's what they would pluck out the eye of all the men of the city. And so if you remember, the Jabesh-Gileads asked Nahash, could you wait just 7 days? Could you just wait 7 days and give us time to see if any of our countrymen, Israelites, would help us? And for some reason, instead of attacking, Nahash, the Ammonite, waited. Well, they waited. And so the Jabesh-Gilead folks sent a message. Now remember, this story that we're telling is on down here just a little ways to establish Saul as the king, because right now there are still some worthless men who have not accepted Saul to be their one and only human king, the king of the nation of Israel. And so the purpose is to get past these worthless men and get them on board, because not all the nation was on board with Saul being king. Now the problem with this is the writer has jumped over the time with Samuel at Gilead when Saul was supposed to wait for 7 days, and we're still going to get to that when we get to chapter 13. We're in chapter 11 because this is still the story about the establishment of Saul, and even though we're down past that visit at Gilgal that he missed, it took a while for the men, all the tribes of Israel and all the men of Israel, to accept Saul as their king. So with that in place, here we come. And this message is sent from the elders of Jabesh, and they did not send it to Saul, which is kind of interesting. Rather, these messengers were sent to every tribal capital in the Promised Land to ask for help. And so in doing, the messengers presented their message in Gibeah, Saul's hometown, which was the hometown of this newly elected king. Why did they not take it to Saul instead? No, they sent it to the nation. Verse number 4 in chapter 11. Then the messengers came to Gibeah of Saul and spoke these words in the hearing of the people. And all the people lifted up their voices and wept. Now behold, Saul was coming up from the field behind the oxen. And he said, what is the matter with the people that they weep? So they related to him the words of the men of Jabesh. Notice, if you will, that the messengers did not tell Saul. They told the people of Gibeah their message. Saul heard it secondhand. He heard it after his people had heard it, and they were crying in sadness for the people of Jabesh. Now, when the message was not sent to Saul directly as the new king, the Spirit of God made Saul's anger burn within him, and it was a righteous anger. Verse number 6. Then the Spirit of God came upon Saul mightily when he heard these words, and he became very angry. May we make an interesting observance at this time in the Scripture. This verse uses the wording, the Spirit of God. It is only the 6th time this wording has been used in the full text of the Holy Bible that comes before this story. The first time it was used in Genesis chapter 1 verse 2 to tell us that the Spirit of God was moving over the surface of the earth. It was then used in Exodus 31:3 and Exodus 35:3. 21 to tell us that the Spirit of God filled the heart and the life of Bezalel with wisdom and craftsmanship to create the articles of the tabernacle complex. Those two passages go together, both talking about the same man who was filled with the Spirit of God. It is used in Numbers chapter 24, verse 2, to tell us that the Spirit of God came upon Balaam and caused him to bless Israel instead of cursing Israel like he had been paid his house full of silver to do. It was used in 1 Samuel chapter 10, verse 10, to tell us that the Spirit of God came upon King Saul and he began to prophesy. Now, in this sixth time, the Almighty, the Spirit of God, came upon King Saul to make him angry for what was happening to his kingdom. What did Saul do in his anger? Well, I'll tell you what he did. He went back to the book of Judges and he pulled a page out of the book of Judges. He used a strategy that had worked well in the nation of Israel in the past. Here we come to Saul's message sent to the nations, verse number 7a. He took a yoke of oxen and cut them in pieces and sent them throughout the territory of Israel by the hand of messengers, saying, "Whoever does not come out after Saul and after Samuel, so shall it be done to his oxen." A similar message was sent in Judges chapter 19, verse 29, when the body of the concubine was cut up and sent throughout the land. Now, here, a more normal sacrifice with a yoke of oxen, that means two, died and was cut up rather than the dead human body. We have to wonder if Saul used the oxen pair that he had just finished plowing with in the field in verse number 5. If so, and probably so, Saul was so angry and he was angry enough to hamper his plowing ability with his favorite oxen in order to make this point as the new king. Saul's threat that was included in the message and for the messengers provided that he was serious. He was serious about helping the people of Jabesh Gilead. I'll tell you this, getting ahead in the story, really jumping to the end of the book. This gesture right here, where Saul does this to rescue Jabesh and return the people of Jabesh Gilead into control, will be returned in favor for him when he is dead. For when he dies, the Jabesh Gilead people will walk all night to rescue the dead body of Saul from the Philistines. 40 years. 40 years. Right here when Saul dies, they will walk all night to rescue his dead body and to bury it when we get to chapter 31 of 1 Samuel. But for now, Saul had part of his nation to save in the capital of Jabesh Gilead. So Saul's message was heard by the people of Israel, verse number 7b. Then the dread of the Lord fell on the people, and they came out as one man. He numbered them in Bezek, and the sons of Israel were 300,000, and the men of Judah 30,000. Now notice, it was not the dread of Saul's warning that caused the people to come out as one man. It was the dread of the Lord. The people of the nation of Israel were wise enough to know that the Lord was to be feared. Their ancestors expressed that fear when they heard the voice of the Lord for the first time at Mount Sinai, when the Lord spoke the Ten Commandments from the mountain, where everyone in the camp could hear the voice of the Lord. Through the 400 years, they and their ancestors had seen and heard the mighty power of the Lord and feared Him greatly. In a smaller way, these same people who felt the dread of the Lord at this time had just shortly before experienced the selecting of Saul as their king at Mizpah with Samuel. No wonder they came out as one man. The warriors of Israel met there at Bezer. If you remember, Bezer was a Levitical city in the tribal area of Reuben, just south of the land of Gilead, which covered some of the land of the tribal area of Gad and some of the tribal area of half the tribe of Manasseh. There in Bezer, in that Levitical city, the men were numbered as 300,000 from the 11 tribes of Israel and 30,000 from the premier tribe of Israel, Judah. 330,000 men in all. It was an incredible army of men. Well, with the troops in Bezer, Saul's plan was delivered to the men of Jabesh. Verse number 9. They said to the messengers who had come, "Thus you shall say to the men of Jabesh Gilead, tomorrow by the time the sun is hot, you will have deliverance." So the messenger went and told the men of Jabesh, and they were glad. Now, the hot of the day, especially when there is no clouds and no cloud cover, arrives between 3 and 4 o'clock each afternoon. What this verse is telling us is that by 3 to 4 o'clock, the battle with the Ammonites will be over and the town of the people of Jabesh Gilead will be delivered. It was welcome news to the elders of the town. But Saul's message and plan must have been more than just telling the elders the time of their deliverance, because Saul's plan must have included a task for the men of Jabesh Gilead to do on the following day. We come to verse number 10 in chapter 11. We come to Saul's plan enacted. Verse 10. Then the men of Jabesh said, "Tomorrow we will come out to you, and you may do to us whatever seems good to you." The next morning, Saul put the people in three companies, and they came into the midst of the camp at the morning watch and struck down the Ammonites until the heat of the day. Those who survived were scattered, so that no two of them were left together. Now, we rarely think about timing of such events, such as in the case of this passage. But it would be well to be an edifying to consider the topic of timing. From the time of creation until today, where we are right now, you listening to me, we are about 6,300 years into the 7,000-year plan for the coming of the Lord at the 7,000-year mark. So until the time markers from Genesis through 1 Samuel, this Saul, when he became the king, he is at about year 3,100 years after the creation of Adam. Now, what are we to make of this? Here is the point. Saul became the king halfway in the time that man has been on earth since the creation until the year 2022 AD. During those 3,100 years before Saul, the art of war had developed greatly across the world. Here in these verses, Saul divided the company of warriors into three groups, and he attacked from three directions at the same time. This act of war was not new. For example, Gideon had used this act of war back in Judges. It was also used by the Israelites when they were bringing judgment on the godless Benjamites at Gibeah in Judges chapter 22. And you will remember in that judgment against the Benjamites, men were used to draw the people out of the city so that the city people would all come out so the city could be destroyed and distract them from behind. The same tactic was used by Joshua to win the battle to capture and conquer the city of Ai on its second try on Ai. The point in all of this is to say, Saul in some way knew at least some of the successful tactics of the art of war. He used them to defeat the Ammonites in this passage. They started at the break of day in the morning, and by 3 to 4 o'clock when the hot was there, it was over. And the Ammonite men died. And Josephus, as I said in the last lesson, tells us that Nahash, this Ammonite, died with his men in this battle led by Saul. Now, do we know that to be true? We know where he got that? We don't know. It's not in the Bible. But that's what Josephus said. So with the victory in Saul's hand, he won the most definitely defining battle that he needed to do to defend and make him the new king of all of Israel. And if you remember, when Saul was chosen and anointed by the people and by Samuel at Mizpah, there were worthless men who did not want to follow him. With Saul's victory, the supporters of Saul made a call for these subversive men of Saul to be punished. Verse number 12. Then the people said to Samuel, "Who is he that said, 'Shall Saul reign over us? Bring the men that we may put them to death.' But Saul said, 'Not a man shall be put to death this day, for today the Lord has accomplished deliverance in Israel.'" Rightly, Saul, the victorious new king of Israel, would have nothing to do with putting to death the countrymen who were skeptical of him at first. It was a wise move, as we will see. With Saul's victory, Samuel saw an opportunity to unite the kingdom of Israel, especially because Saul did not allow the subversive men to be killed. So Samuel called for the renewal of Saul as king in Gilgal, and our writer tells us about that here in verse number 14. Then Samuel said to the people, "Come, let us go to Gilgal and renew the kingdom there." So all the people went to Gilgal, and there they made Saul king before the Lord in Gilgal. There they also offered sacrifices of peace offerings before the Lord. And there Saul and all of the men of Israel rejoiced greatly. Gilgal was the place where Saul was to meet Samuel after Saul had spent time in Gibeah on the hill of God with the prophets. But in this storyline, that meeting was not recorded by Samuel, at least not by the writer either in this current storyline. If you remember, when we were expecting Saul to go to Samuel and meet Samuel there in Gilgal, the writer changed the storyline to tell us about the meeting at Mizpah to present Saul as the new king of Israel through a series of casting lots. And Saul was there, not in Gilgal, as directed. And in the next part of the previous storyline, Saul is plowing in his field in Gibeah when word comes that the Jabesh-Gileads need help from the men of the nation of Israel. And Saul stepped up to act as king, the protector of the people. gathering the forces of Israel, and he defeated the enemy of the people of Jabesh-Gilead. Now, with the victory in hand, the people of Israel were with Saul at Bezer, and they acknowledged that Saul was the rightful king at Gilgal. Guess what? Samuel was there too. Had Saul never met with Samuel at Gilgal in the first place? What can this be the answer to all this confusion? Well, we'll address that when we get to this confusion later when we get down to the book to chapter 13. My, you've heard a lot about the book of chapter 13. But we've got to get past chapter 12 first. Well, the warriors of Israel had moved from Bezer to Gilgal. So what was so special about Gilgal? If you remember, when the Israelites crossed the Jordan River for the very first time under the leadership of Joshua, they camped in an open area just east in the eyeshot of Jericho. It was from that campsite that Israel set the tabernacle complex and entered into its first battle with Jericho and with Ai. Later, the tabernacle complex was moved with the people over to Shechem for a while, and then it was permanently moved and set at Shiloh, where it still was at this point in the story of Saul, and will continue to be for about 27 years after it is captured, when it will be captured by the Philistines. Well, if you remember, that first camp there in Gilead, it was held there, and it was special to the place and the hearts of the people. The name Gilead means rolling. It was given that name because it was the location where the Lord says to the Israel, "Today I have rolled away the reproach of Egypt from you." So the name of that place is called Gilgal to that day. Joshua chapter 5, verse 9. Well, by the time of this story in Samuel and Saul's life, the campsite had been populated of Gilgal and stood as an important city in the history of Israel. Jericho had been destroyed, Gilgal had been built up. Samuel often made the circuit to judge the people, and he would leave his home in Ramah, travel north to Bethel, then to Gilgal, and finally to Mizpah before he returned home to Ramah. And when Samuel consecrated Saul at Ramah, Samuel sent Saul to wait for him at Gilgal. But no doubt, Samuel was about to make his circuit again of the three cities, Ramah to Bethel to Gilgal, back to Mizpah, then to home, back to Ramah. Samuel probably had Saul go to Gibeah and then to Gilgal, Gibeah, where he would meet on the hill of God with the prophets, and then to Gilgal, where he was to wait for 7 days for Samuel to arrive. No doubt, Samuel visited Bethel first. That's the reason why Saul went to Gibeah to be with the prophets first, to kill some time. So Samuel visited Bethel first and did go to meet Saul at Gilgal before holding that meeting at Mizpah to present Saul to the nation. But for some reason, the writer did not record the meeting at Gilgal in that order, at least not yet. Now, from the warrior camp at Bezer, Gilgal was absolutely the perfect place to hold a meeting with Samuel. It was the place where it all started with Joshua after crossing the Jordan River. From Bezer, most of the warriors would have need to cross the Jordan River to go home, and the four fords that crossed the River Jordan were near Gilgal. So each of the three companies of the warriors could divide up and all arrive in Gilgal going across those four fords about the same time. Well, with that as an introduction between chapter 11 and 12, we come to Samuel's message at Gilgal to the people about the story of the confirmation of Saul by the nation. And to begin the message, He begins with what we call the witness of Samuel's integrity. Chapter 12, verse 1, and it says this. Then Samuel said to all of Israel, "Behold, I have listened to your voice and all that you said to me, and I have appointed a king over you. Now here is the king walking before you, but I am old and gray, and behold, my sons are with you. And I have walked before you from my youth even to this day. Here am I, bear witness against me before the Lord and His anointed. Whose ox have I taken? Whose donkey have I taken? And whom have I defrauded? Whom have I oppressed? And from whose hand have I taken a bribe to blind my eyes with it? I will restore it to you." And they said, "You have not defrauded us or oppressed us or taken anything from any man's hand." He said to them, "The Lord is witness against you, and His anointed is witness this day that you have found nothing in my hand." And they said, "He is witness." Speaking about the Lord being the witness. Samuel stated his case and he asked the people for an answer. And their answer was, "You have not defrauded us or oppressed us or taken anything from any man's hand." And Samuel then held their feet to the fire by telling them, if they ever changed their mind about their answer, the Lord had witnessed their answer and would hold them to it.